American Road Trip Talk begins after this message.
You know his vision of America, but do you know his name? One of the most highly respected artists of America's Great Depression era, John Stuart Curry, defined the country's perceptions of the American Midwest. His painting, Tornado Over Kansas, is still one of the most iconic images in U.S. pop culture today. For the first time in a quarter century, Curry's masterworks will be exhibited under one roof. Visit the Muskegon Museum of Art in Michigan this summer to see John Stuart Curry, Weathering the Storm, an exhibition of life, art, and the American Midwest. To learn more, visit MuskegonArtMuseum.org/Curry. The horizon is wide and the highway is calling. That means it's time for another episode of American Road Trip Talk. I'm your host, Gary Mance, with a welcome and an invitation to travel the byways and back roads of yesteryear, searching for America in every incomparable mile. Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen. Glad to have you along for the ride. Glad to be working alongside Nathan Miller, our producer. This is American Road Trip Talk. We'll be back with the interview right after this.
Hi, everybody. This is Anson Williams from Happy Days, and I want to bring attention to a life-saving product called Alert Drops. Drowsy driving is one of the most catastrophic problems in America, and Alert Drops will stop it. What is Alert Drops? Alert Drops is a simple spray on the tongue made out of citric acid, sour lemon, and water. A simple spray on the tongue, nothing in your system, and you're naturally awake, naturally alert. Go to alertdrops.com. Very important. Go to alertdrops.com and stay safe.
American Road Magazine would like to thank Ranker.com, EnjoyTravelLife.com, and TravelersPress.com for honoring us with excellent ratings on their recent lists of outstanding travel magazines. American Road was listed among the top 25 travel magazines in 2024 by Ranker, by Travelers Press in the top 25 travel magazines 2024, one of only three in that group that are dedicated to travel in the USA. And Enjoy Travel Life rated American Road Magazine as number one in the best specialty magazines for travelers 2024 category. To say the least, we are grateful.
Get your daily dose of variety. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Welcome back to American Road Trip Talk. On today's show, our topic is Henry M. Leland, an American machinist, inventor, engineer, and automotive entrepreneur. He founded the two premier American luxury automotive marks, Cadillac and Lincoln. His motto was craftsmanship a creed, accuracy a law. In this episode, we will hear about his determination and innovative genius from Carl Petrie, a graduate of the Lincoln Technical Institute, certified in auto and diesel technology, and a longtime admirer of Mr. Leland. Carl Petrie, welcome back to the show, my friend.
It's always great to be on the show.
Carl, we have a lot to say and only a little bit of time to say it. So why don't we start with a brief biography of Mr. Leland.
Well, Mr. Leland was born in Massachusetts, and he had a desire and a calling to work on machinery. This was something because he was born in 1843. At that time, Americans were not really into machinery. The British were. And but he, in turn, wanted to be a mechanic, a machinist, design machines, that sort of thing, which at that time, the people, the British, didn't want to hear. They considered if you're a Yankee, you could run a machine, but you can't design it, and you can't definitely cannot be a mechanic. So he took that to heart because he started working at a very early age, at 11. And there was a British foreman that was there. And when he saw that Henry Leland started working on the machines and started adjusting them and that sort of thing, the foreman didn't like that. He yelled at him. He said, you know, Americans or Yankees don't touch these machines. British people do. And because of that, he always had this, Henry Leland had this thing within him that he wanted to show up the British that he and the Americans could do anything they can do even better, which he, in time, he proved it.
Henry Leland seems to have, he seems to be one of those people who has it in him and knows it from a very young age. I've always held people in high esteem who know who they are early on and then follow through on their dreams, even if they're not sure exactly where those dreams will take them.
Oh, he was, when it came to machinery and the building and stuff, he was a fanatic. He wanted everything to be absolutely perfect. As a matter of fact, at the time, like 1903, Ransom E. Olds, or the Oldsmobile Company, were making cars that would produce like 3-4 horsepower. And Henry Leland, he had one of these cars. He took the engine out of the car, rebuilt it, not using any more parts, just made it to precision, that everything was absolutely perfect. And he got the thing to run on, let's say, 10 horsepower. Remember, from 3 horsepower to 10 horsepower just by rebuilding it. So he went to see Ransom E. Olds, who, of course, was the leader of Oldsmobile. And he went there and he said, I took your engine out, I rebuilt it, and now I'm producing about 10 horsepower. And of course, Ransom E. Olds says, that's impossible. My engine does not put out that kind of horsepower. He says, but I'm telling you, I rebuilt your engine. This is what I'm doing. And so Oldsmobile said, now just get out of my office. So Henry Leland and his friend of his went down to the parking lot. They disconnected and they pulled the engine out of his car. They took it up to the man's office and put the engine on his desk. And he said, you will test this engine and it'll produce 10 horsepower. Well, Ransom E. Olds thought, well, this guy's crazy, but I'll test it anyway. But it did not produce 10 horsepower. It produced 11. So right immediately, Ransom Olds decided to make him in charge of building engines for Oldsmobile. And he did. And it worked out great because the engines were fantastic, but there was a problem. Olds wanted to mass produce these cars, and Leland was taking his time, making sure that every engine was built to his specifications. It was great, but the problem is that it slowed down the production. And although the cars ran really great, Olds felt that he was losing money. So eventually he came to terms where he had to let Leland go. So what happened after that was Leland decided to start his own car company. And so all his friends around said, okay, you're going to build your own cars and you're going to build them in Detroit because everybody else was building it in Detroit.
Right.
So they said, okay, what are you going to call your car? The Leland? And he goes, no, because it's going to be in Detroit. He goes, who founded the city of Detroit? And they said, well, the French explorers, Cadillac and LaSalle. He goes, I will name my cars Cadillac and LaSalle. And that's how we got the Cadillac name. Well, because after the founding of Detroit.
Innovative, even in his marketing approach.
Oh, he was incredible. As a matter of fact, when he had his company, when people, he used to hire people, every single person that worked in his company had to go through him personally. So they went to his office and he would sit him down in front of the desk and he would say to them, you know, what's your qualifications? He wanted to see what these people were like, to see if they thought like he did, that they want to make a high quality automobile, not just a job. So one of the things he used to do, being quirky as he was, when the gentleman was sitting in front of him and he was asking questions back and forth, Henry Leland would get up behind the desk, take his fingers, run it through the guy's hair. And if he found that he had so much grease on his hair, he says, I'm sorry, I can't use you. He felt anybody that had that kind of grease on his hair should not be building his cars.
I've never heard anything like that before in my life.
Well, that's the kind of guy he was. And he wanted his cars to be so perfect that he designed machines to make sure that the pistons and everything else were absolutely perfect. So he went to Sweden and he got machine parts, these parts to make these special machines that when the pistons were coming off the assembly line after the foundry, he would put them in these self-made machines to see if they were absolutely perfect. The tolerances were perfect. And if they weren't, he'd throw them out. And he built more till they were absolutely perfect. Now, to show you how great this man was, in Europe, they would test cars like Rolls and car in Mercedes. They had a contest to see who built the best cars. And so here's this American, you know, Henry Leland with his car called Cadillac. And he went to up against Mercedes, Rolls, and he's going right up against, which they couldn't believe that a Yankee had the gall to bring cars to go against the Europe's finest. But the way it used to work years ago wasn't so much speed going around a track. They had this very steep hill. And the way it worked was you had to build the car. They would ship in your car into crates. There were three cars each, and they would take these cars and pieces, and they would bring them into these stables, and they would dump the parts there, and they said, okay, now you have to build your car here. After you build it, then you're going to go up the hill and down the hill, and the one that could do it the fastest, and of course to make it up and down, would be the winner. So Cadillac, remember, every part that he made was absolutely perfect. That means if you have three cars, you could interchange the parts of any one of the cars and they would fit. Because the way it worked with automobiles back then is when you built a car, you had to have a machinist and you had a mechanic because parts were not interchangeable. So if you had a part and it needed massaging to get in there, you had to have a machinist that had to sand it down or do whatever he had to do to make sure that the part would fit. But of course, Cadillac, everything was interchangeable. So they dropped off all his parts in a stable along with the other people, Mercedes. And what he did is he built the car so fast, they couldn't believe it because they were all mixed parts. And every part was interchangeable, so he went ahead and he built the cars. Now, once it was all done, then it started the competition. So the part was you had to run up this hill, turn around at the top, and come down. So here comes Cadillac, and he starts going up the hill, and he all start off at the same time. Mercedes, Rolls, they all start up the hill at the same time. Now, what happened, Cadillac was so good that Cadillac went up the hill, turned around, started to come down, and the rest of the cars are still chugging their way up to the top. And so he got the award, the Doers Award it was called, and Cadillac was known as the standard of the world.
And the standard of the world.
Yes, because no one could build a car as good as the Cadillac Motor Car Company.
Doesn't it make you wonder, Carl, why somebody hadn't thought of this interchangeability before? It seems so fundamental, and yet at the time it must have seemed to Mr. Leland's contemporaries and probably the general public as revolutionary.
Well, don't forget, we're talking about the times. You know, we just got through horse and wagons. You know, everybody was riding a horse or they're pulling a wagon or a coach or whatever. And now this thing came called machinery that self-propelled people around. You know, either it was electric or later on it was gasoline. And this is what they had. So there was a big mystique about these self-propelled machines to go up and down. And also the thing that they were interchangeable parts, it never even dawned on them, because there was such a mystique about machinery that it took special people to build this thing. And so the idea about every part being the same, every part being interchangeable, was a foreign idea to everybody except Henry Leland. He was a fanatic. And oh, by the way, here's something that's very interesting. After he started building his cars, now you have to remember the times. A lot of the cars had, instead of a steering wheel, they had a tiller, just like a boat, you know. And you would, you know, swing it to the left and right and make the car go left and right. You sat in the middle of the seat. And some of the cars, you sat on the right-hand side, just like they did in England. So when Henry Leland came out with the Cadillac, people said, okay, nice car. And then they started telling him, okay, we're going to start building a steering wheel on the right-hand side. And he goes, no. He goes, the British put their steering wheel on the right-hand side. He goes, we're Americans. We're now going to put our steering wheel on the left-hand side. And that's why to this day, in the United States, the steering wheel is on the left-hand side, not the right. All because some foreman many, many years ago gave a young man named Henry Leland a hard time about being a Yankee.
Part of his legacy. And in 1911, Carl, tell us about what Henry Leland came out with that in itself would be considered revolutionary.
Oh, that would be the starter.
Yes.
He came out, before, in order to start a car, you had a crank. A regular, you know, crank that would go into the car's crankshaft. And it had a magneto. And it was spring-loaded, and you would, you know, turn this thing around, and then the car would start. But sometimes it would backfire and could tear your arm off, break your arm, break your thumb, break your hand. But this is the way you started a car. You had a crank in the front. And so Henry Leland, he didn't like it. He came out with something. He says, I got an idea. So he came out with this little tiny motor that you could, what's called the Bendix, and you would turn the key or to hit the button to start it, and it would energize this little motor to go into the flywheel and start spinning it just like you would a crank. And then when it started, magnetically, it would pull back the gears, the starting gear, and the car would be running, and it wouldn't be grinding anything. It was a self-starting car. And so he came out with it, which was revolutionary. And from that day on, all the better cars had self-starters. So if you look at your car, if you get into it and you're turning the key and you hear your engine start to turn, you could thank Henry Leland for that. He was responsible in 1911.
Did Henry Leland have a brain trust around him? I mean, he was a genius, but he would have wanted to surround himself with people who could, if not think quite at his level, at least be very more than adequate contributors to his ideas and people who could implement them.
Yes, he did. You know, he had a number of people that were really close to him who thought like him. See, if you didn't think like Henry Leland, you wouldn't last long. He didn't like people to make shortcuts. He wanted his cars to be the best. And it wasn't so much making money. He said that would come naturally. You make a good product and people will buy it. And that was his goal. Now, of course, 1908, Ford came out with the Model T. That was wonderful. But on the other hand, people were still buying Cadillacs because they were quality. If you look at a Cadillac of the same year and look at a Model T, you would say there's no comparison. The Cadillac is such a superior car. The Cadillac could easily go into competition with anything Europe had to offer. You know, Mercedes at the time, or Mercedes-Benz, I believe that's about the time they changed it. Mercedes-Benz or you know, the other well-known British cars at the time, or German cars. Cadillac was as good as them, or in many, many cases, superior. So his thing was, I'm going to build a quality car. It's just like Mercedes-Benz. You never hear them say, we want to make the most cars. We want to make, you know, a very good quality car. Not the most, but we're going to try to make the best. And Cadillac at the time was giving them a run for their money. Everybody wanted a Cadillac. Now, when World War I came out, United States, of course, went into the war in 1918. And Cadillac supplied cars for our army, for our generals, for our dignitaries. And later on, he started building cars that were able to have guns on them, searchlights on them, and all that. So he made these military equipment type of vehicles. And so when you went to Europe in World War I, you saw Cadillacs all over the place. And the thing about the Cadillacs were, they didn't fall apart. They were very strong vehicles. They were strong that they could carry military gear on them, like I said, searchlights or whatever. They could carry them with no problem at all. And some of the other makes, like Ford, whatever, yeah, they were good, but they couldn't haul that kind of equipment, because Cadillac had power and the other cars were just, you know, touring cars, which actually goes back to when he was when Henry was a young boy. His father had a business. He was a freight hauler, and he started from Boston, Massachusetts to Montreal. Now, the father had a team of 8 horses. Now, the wagons would carry 10,000 pounds. So that was 10,000 pounds that had to be taken from Boston to Montreal and back. So here we have a team of horses, and everybody else who was doing it had 6 horses. Henry's father had 8. And his competition said, are you crazy? 8 horses? They're going to eat more. You have to take care of them. Have 6 horses like ours. But see, he said, I don't want 6 horses. I want 8, because if they'll be stronger, there'll be less stress on the horses, and they could carry this with no problem. Because remember, the roads were muddy. They had ruts in them. So it took a lot to move this 10,000 pounds around. And so Henry's father said, more horsepower, the better. And that thought of having more power to move something around, it's less stress on everything, less stress on the engine, a transmission, a clutch. It's all less stress for, because you have more horsepower. So the thought of having that was handed down to Henry Leland, and that's why his cars had the extra horsepower.
Carl, we're down to about 2 minutes. Mr. Leland started the Lincoln Car Company. How did that happen? Well, unfortunately, we'll have to get the short version.
Okay, here's the short version. When Cadillac was a part of General Motors, it was because of a man by the name of Durant. Durant ran General Motors. And there was a clash between Leland and Durant. Durant was a businessman. He just wanted to make a lot of money. And he wanted to cheapen a lot of things. He wanted to make the cars cheaper. We'll sell more. We'll make more money. And Henry Leland said, I want to make a quality car, and you're preventing me from doing it. So there was words between the two of them. And what happened is that Henry Leland left, and he says, I'm going to build another car, and it's going to be called Lincoln. So that's why he left Cadillac and went on to make the Lincoln. That's how that started.
What an incredible man, Henry M. Leland. And obviously, you're a great admirer of his and a student of his genius. That really comes through, Carl, and you know so much, and you've shared so much with us today. I can't thank you enough, my friend. This was really an education for me and a lot of our listeners, I'm sure.
Oh, thank you very much.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to American Road Trip Talk. Along with Thomas and Becky Rep, co-founders of American Road Magazine, we remind you to visit our website, AmericanRoadMagazine.com, to preview the current issue. Until next time, dream well and drive safely on the American Road.
Hi, everybody. This is Anson Williams from Happy Days, and I'm so excited to tell you about American Road. It is the best car travel magazine in the world. They have the most fantastic adventures detailed in each magazine with all your itinerary. We could just jump in the car with your family and have the most fabulous adventures you've ever had in your life. Please, get a copy of American Road and start your own adventure.